Willkommen, Jens Söntgen.
Welcome, Jens Söntgen, on the stage. You're a philosopher and you're writing great books. How to do philosophy with the help of fire? We will see an example how you make a fire and how you do philosophy, which we'll see in your first contribution, where you deal with one side of explosions, with nitroglycerin in particular. Right. I think in these explosions there are two chains. One of the hydrocarbons, crude oil, but in the film it's primarily about nitroglycerin, which is a different energy system. With we use this oil to drive our cars and use it for productive things such as plastics and other substances, even aspirin. Drugs are also made of oil, but nitroglycerin is a negative energy system. To get these substances to for all purposes, I would like to present it, and it's not only about hydrogen and carbon, but about nitrogen, which brings us to the term of nitroglycerin. It's nitrogen is a gas, and the chemistry is the activated nitrogen, which you can also buy in a do-it-yourself store to use it as a fertilizer, but of which we also know that it can be used to build bombs. And that was originally imported from Chile and India. Saltpeter was imported. Here you see the roots up to 1913. And it's 100 years old, and the nitrogen in the air was compounded in the Haber-Bosch process. Here you see the equation of ammoniac, which is the basis for saltpeter, and that is then the basis for the production of nitroglycerin. I visited this plant, and they call it the Congo in Ludwigshafen because these pipes are so much entwined. And you don't smell anything. Even a lot of gases are produced, so it's done properly. So nitroglycerin is basically the modern form of what was black powder. So for in the past and for many years, all explosions and war used black powder. It's a mixture. The main component is saltpeter, and we also have carbon and sulfur. But today it's only used for fireworks, and you will see it in a couple of years. Black powder produces a lot of smoke, and this is a sign that it is a very inefficient explosive. Here you see it nicely. It burns and produces a red color. This is the alchemistic sign. It was called a dragon, red dragon, which you find in old cellars where you see it on the walls. And here you see everything together in an old picture. Here you see manure, and this organic matter is the basis for the natural building of a saltpeter, and I did it myself. And here you see that it was not high quality because it's impure, it's brown. And there are also crystals of salts, and these long needles is really saltpeter, with which you can use as an explosive. So you can produce explosive out of compost, and that was the standard for the wars, and even of 1866 and 1873, the German-French War, until people realized that this is something of the past. To produce powder and just mix things. The idea was to control things at an atom level and to build molecules. And the first molecule that was built, nitroglycerin, nitrocellulose, and a kind of cotton, and that were the first fully synthetically produced explosive. And Alfred Nobel was the great inventor who did most of the inventions you all know, who was became the dynamite king in history, and read his epitaph in war, where in the newspaper, where he was blamed to be responsible for all for wars and armaments, and he decided to do something else, and then he established the Nobel Prize. But he invented he wanted to invent a solid weapon to make all wars obsolete, and his contemporaries thought that dynamite would be something, but we know that that was not true. That is what it looks like, and what is even more important is the so-called smokeless powder, which substituted completely black powder since the war of the First World War, starting in 1914, which was also invented by Alfred Nobel. It was ballistite. Here's the different variants. Some look like spaghetti or even powder, and it's fully, purely synthetic explosive, and which releases much more energy. You see an old picture and of these arc-like shooting and down a highly energetic new explosive, which is much more efficient and can cross longer distances. What is important, these modern wars, which were foreseen by Nobel, without any smoke, while you produce a lot of smoke for black powder, these synthetic chemicals, the whole destructive energy is in the molecule, which gives you different or much many more opportunities, which changed wars and also changed the relation to nature, because you could have much more effective explosions. You had more energy to use for explosion. But in particular in warfare, it played a key role. And this was also the motto of the citizens' movie. This war, the nuclear bomb for the peace movement of the 19th century. And people took to the streets in the 19th century and said, stop these destructive machines with these new, stop these new weapons. We want to solve conflicts peacefully. And in 1899 was the first peace demonstration. And but it, of course, didn't prevent the First World War, which used these efficient explosives and fuels that had been invented. This is aftermath. 1948, where these cards were sold with the Avazza coffee machines as a warning for explosives, which were still there and are still there in Cologne and close to Verdun. It's still in the soil. That was a brief overview and the side story of the film, where two molecular chains coming together, the nitrogen and the hydrocarbon story. Thank you.
What we consider to be so spectacular about the time 1948 is that there's so many things getting together. There is chemistry, nitrogen, then we also have a coal-based chemistry that is very much advanced. And at that time, something new comes into play on the basis of carbon molecules. Molecules are being built, like, for instance, nitrogen that gets together with the molecule of hydrocarbon molecules, and you synthesize molecules like an engineer. So you can do that on the level of hydrocarbons. You know, it takes place in the 19th century. You can compare it with aspirin. Aspirin is invented on the basis of a substance in willow bark, and it's a similar leap in technological advance. Bundling efficiency on a molecular level. create explosives, but these are no longer natural products. So you put things in, and at the end of that process, you get something new out. If you have saltpeter on the walls of your basement, that's saltpeter made by nature. But then we see this picture, bombs for Berlin, terror in Tokyo. Toluol is described here. Here's the molecule assembled by the technosphere. That is to say, the technosphere puts substance in and creates something new. I mean, the technosphere goes right into the molecular level. You would have to add nitrate in order to get TNT and have a proper explosive. But it's, you know, it's no longer the idea of the willow bark. You don't use the whole product to invent something new, to extract something. You take individual molecules, put them together to create something new. And that was a development that was very much focused in Germany. The first time where we have science fashion molecules, that is something where people talk about the development of both explosives and fertilizers. The beginning was 1890. Then carbon chemistry developed somehow in the early 20s of the 20th century, where fuels are being developed. But that's in the 20th century, right? You know, the processes as such, and also the theory was developed in the 19th century, the idea and theory of molecular chemistry. But then industrial processes were developed only in the 20th century, where refineries distilled oil. I mean, Germany had a very strong focus on oil until 1945. Most of the processes were based on coal, and coal was dehydrated and turned into the things that were required. You know, we always have to look both ways. We have to look at the level of molecules. And then when we wonder, what did this lead to? This is isooctane, the standard fuel, engine fuel. And behind this molecule, you have this huge infrastructure with those pressure vessels where the processes that take place in an engine first take place in the factory to produce the fuel. So substances are no longer just extracted from water or soil. Complex industrial processes are relevant for all kinds of substances. That was especially important for Germany, Germany that never had colonies. And that is why Germany said, we'll build our colonies in the air. We do not get saltpeter from China or any other country. We just get it from out of the air. And that's the idea of the Haber-Bosch method, which became the basis for a huge industry, because the catalytic process was used to crack and could use the oil in a much better way. So the intellectual factor in chemistry was important. And those harmless substances in the hands of people can have destructive forces. When we talk about oil and coal, we always talk about substances that interact with other substances. And 1948 can be identified as the moment where the tools are sophisticated enough to build from molecules things that can change the whole world. Yes, and there was the need to do it. I mean, when we talk about the Haber-Bosch process, tens of thousands of experiments were made before the catalyst was found. It was only 30 years ago when people fully understood how the Haber-Bosch process works. You have written a book with Mr. Ertl, who also received the Nobel Prize. And here we see not only molecules have been put together, but also the the instruments are synthetic. That is to say, when we talk about the need to look deeper and deeper into the substances in the earth, we always have to look up to see the global consequences. So we talk about synthetic things all the time. The tools that produce new things are synthetic, are designed on the level of atoms. And the chemistry is a chemistry of substances that do not exist in nature, that are fully man-made, fully synthetic. I just wanted to come back to the term colonialization. The fact that Germany had no colony, that Germany was too late as a colonial nature. And then sometimes people talk about an inner colonialization. You said it's no longer the resource, it's completely artificially designed substance. Would that be a kind of process of colonialization regarding the access to resources and when producing things from different natural substances? What does that mean? I mean, what is typical for the German nation building is that you do not just look it's trade and colonialization. Germany says we build an industry and we will take the atoms to build the things we need. And it mostly started with coal. And this is how all these processes were invented. And it is by no means an accident that those processes were so important, and these substances were so important for the two world wars, like rubber. Rubber seems to be a most boring material, but you need it for all kinds of industries and for wheels. But rubber, as a natural material, existed only in tropical countries, and Germany had no access. And Germany said, we'll build our rubber ourselves. And this is what most of the rubber is today. It's an artificial rubber. But of course, the question at the end of the day is who owns the coal reservoirs, the air, who owns the soil from which oil is extracted. I mean, these are political issues. Absolutely. There is a policy of molecules, if you so will. As we have heard in the presentation, there were the indigenous people. They were just sent away. They had to stand by and look on how the wells were burning. And the same thing happens until the present days. It's all a question of power, very strongly interrelated with power issues. Power issues, also questions of material as well. How much do we have to know about these objects? You said you also work as a chemist and as a designer, as a DIY man, so you like materials. Do we have to go back to the alchemists? The alchemists started somewhere in the dirt and tried to distill things, but we are living in a fully synthetic world, so basically we would have to go back to where the alchemists were, go to the dirty areas, the dirty regions where the mines were, in order to see where do our molecules, where does our clean synthetic world come from. And we also have to face a number of dangers. And we have prepared a video where you will set fire to 2 spoons of oil and we'll see what happens. I have to tell you a story again before we see that movie. The question of what do we do with the oil here on stage? Well, somehow you can't set fire or burn some oil. We wanted to show you an elementary petrochemical process, and we have found out they're so complex and they need so extreme boundary conditions. You need a factory. You can't rebuild such a factory on stage. You cannot just pour liquids together and set fire to it. Great. Let's see in the movie that it wouldn't be a good idea to do it right here on stage. So again, it's one of those cases where we can only talk, and all the dirty work will be done on celluloid, on film. But let's move over to our table and let's see the wonderful movie made in Bobingen, the oil periphery of Austria. the oil that is being burned here is from Bobingen, because in Bobingen, indeed, there is an oil well near Groß Eitingen. Of course, the quantities of oil in Austria are not immense, but there is some oil. And there you see the energy contained in the oil. Is there some sound? Yes. And you can best see it when you pour some water into the oil, because it evaporates immediately and the oil is spreading immediately. That is why it would not be a good idea to use water to extinguish an oil fire. Let's see it once more with a little less light and more sound. And now ignition and move away. Extinguish. Now do it. As I said, we could not light the fire on stage, but we will symbolically hand over the oil from the sphere. We will remove it from the sphere of physics and geology and hand it over to the sphere of chemistry. As Dieter Hille said, in order to drill for oil, you need a lot of chemistry. Without chemistry, not much will be happening. And in the refinery, of course, processes get more intensified. Kind of strange soup here. We've got this bedrock here, a bedrock that you could find in Holzmagen. It's oil shale. You could heat it. It would smell like at a petrol station if we heated it up now. If you heat up this bedrock, this kind of oil shale, yes, people have tried to extract oil from this type of bedrock, but it didn't work quite well. You have to heat it up in order to smell it. While we are heating it, I should say something. It's important to see that crude is only half of the story. Now I can smell something, yes. Crude oil is just half the story. The rest is process chemistry. And of course, petrol enters our world only after all kinds of processes of chemical changes. The way we encounter oil is not the way they encountered oil long, long time ago. It's a highly artificial product. And this artificial product, when poured into an engine, will develop a very wild spirit. And we will hear the wild spirit in the next sound of oil. It's an engine opera mixed by our colleague Bernd Hopfengeldner, who works at Beauty of Oil. It's the killer application of petromodernity, the combustion engine. And this music we are now going to hear is called Combustion Engine. We start with a helicopter.